Chapter 4, JFK and the CIA. In the early 1960s, Mark Lane was a young New York lawyer drawn to progressive causes. His work on behalf of defendants' rights, his brief tenure in the New York legislature, and his political work on behalf of John F. Kennedy's presidential election bid probably drew him to the case of the president's murder. Even before the Warren Commission had issued its report, Lane established a client relationship with Marguerite Oswald, the accused assassin's mother, who was convinced of her son's innocence. He began interviewing witnesses the Warren Commission ignored and those who claimed the FBI had changed their statements. He also interviewed dozens of witnesses who did in fact testify before the Warren Commission and asked them questions the commission lawyers had not. What emerged was a different set of facts than the ones presented in the official report, and Oswald's guilt appeared far from an open and shut case. In 1966, Lane published a book, Rush to Judgment, in which he laid out the defense of Lee Harvey Oswald. It was the first of the conspiracy theory literature and remains a valuable resource to this day, mainly because he was able to interview so many witnesses so soon after the crime. It also inspired other skeptics, providing the ammunition with which to attack the credibility of the Warren Commission. While pointing to a conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination, Lane did not suggest who might have been responsible. But it wasn't long before another Warren Commission critic did, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison. Garrison is perhaps best known to the younger generation as the main character in Oliver Stone's 1991 movie JFK. Because Oswald had spent time in New Orleans just before the assassination, Garrison had his office launch a full-scale investigation into the president's murder. It wasn't long before he connected Oswald to a number of shadowy New Orleans characters, including David Ferry, Guy Bannister, and a mysterious man going by the name of Clem Bertrand. Ferry was a strange-looking man who at one time had been an Eastern Airlines pilot. He had connections to Bannister, the former special agent in charge of the Chicago office of the FBI. Both men worked for G. Ray Gill, an attorney representing New Orleans mafia figure Carlos Marcello. Bannister had a private detective agency in New Orleans, and Garrison claimed that it was heavily involved in supporting CIA anti-Castro activities. Garrison connected Ferry to Oswald on the testimony of one of Bannister's associates, pulled into Garrison's office for questioning about his whereabouts on November 22nd. Ferry told inconsistent stories, including one that he and two young friends had driven to Houston in a driving rainstorm to go ice skating. Garrison's investigation produced one of the pro-Castro handbills that Oswald handed out on the street the previous summer. The handbill was stamped with the address of Oswald's group, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. The address was 544 Camp Street. The building that housed 544 Camp Street was at the corner of Camp and Lafayette Streets. The building had a side entrance with the address 531 Lafayette Street. In 1963, that was the address of Bannister's private detective agency. Coincidence? Garrison didn't think so. When Garrison went to the address to see it again, he noted that it was in the heart of New Orleans' intelligence community. The local offices of the FBI, CIA, Secret Service, and Office of Naval Intelligence were all nearby. Eventually, Garrison came to the conclusion that the mysterious figure Clem Bertrand was local businessman Clay Shaw, who he identified as a CIA operative. In 1967, a New Orleans grand jury indicted Shaw for a conspiracy to murder President John F. Kennedy, setting off a firestorm in Washington and in the media. NBC News and Newsweek in particular produced hard-hitting reports on Garrison and his investigation, suggesting not only that he was wrong, but willfully seeking publicity with his probe. Garrison defended himself in the October 1967 Playboy interview, in which he stopped short of suggesting the CIA was behind the president's murder, but said men with CIA connections were. In the absence of further and much more conclusive evidence to the contrary, however, we must assume that the plotters were acting on their own rather than on CIA orders when they killed the president, Garrison said. As far as we have been able to determine, they were not in the pay of the CIA at the time of the assassination, and this is one of the reasons the president was murdered. I'll explain that later and what I mean by that. But the CIA could not face up to the American people and admit that its former employees had conspired to assassinate the president. So from the moment Kennedy's heart stopped beating, the agency attempted to sweep the whole conspiracy under the rug. The CIA has spared neither time nor the taxpayers' money in its efforts to hide the truth about the assassination from the American people. In this respect, it has become an accessory after the fact in the assassination.